Daily Coast Radio on NetRootsRadio.com proudly presents.
Is this my guy?
Armando Lawrence, Jesse LeGreco. You're entering the Ministry of Truth.
Opening a can of whoop ass on the usual suspects.
And now, here's Armando and Jesse.
Okay, so if an abortion could be considered in a case of, say, a tubal pregnancy or something like that, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. So how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. But let's assume that maybe that didn't work or something. You know, I think there should be some punishment, but the punishment ought to be in the rapist and not attacking.
In the case of legitimate rape, yes, he said that. Good morning, everybody. You have just been listening to Todd Akin, the Republican candidate for Senate in Missouri, talking about legitimate rape and how he can control a woman's body. That's one of its topics we'll be talking about this morning on the Ministry of Truth show with Jesse LeGreco. I'm Armando Lorenz, and what I'm going to do right now is call the Ministry of Truth on our Skype call and get his take on it. Hold on 1 second while I get the Ministry of Truth.
Good morning.
Hey.
How are you today?
Good morning, Jesse. How are you this morning?
Not bad. Happy, I guess, Monday to all of our listeners.
Yeah, Jesse. On the intro, what I did was, before I got you on the line, was I played for our audience the infamous words of one Todd Akin. If you haven't heard them, Jesse, I can play them again. I assume you have heard them.
Yes.
Legitimate rape.
I've heard him several times today.
Legitimate rape and control of a woman's body and how that really reflects the Republican mind, in my opinion. It is about Todd Akin, and the Romney campaign came out and said they disagree. What they didn't say is what they disagree with. Maybe they disagree with the concept of legitimate rape. Maybe they don't believe what the good schools in Missouri apparently taught Todd Akin via their "you don't have to learn science if it conflicts with your religion" clause, which is a part of a referendum in Missouri this year. But they do agree, or at least Paul Ryan agreed, that women don't have the right to choose to not have their rapist child. So on that part, as far as I know, Paul Ryan agrees with Todd Akin. So I think that we need to hear a little bit more about that from them before we give them, okay, well, that's just Todd Akin. No, that isn't just Todd Akin. Paul Ryan's there, too.
Oh, you know what? To me, this isn't even, how do I say it? This isn't a Republican making a mistake. This isn't a public official like just, oops, I said the wrong thing. I really meant to say grapes, you know? They believe this stuff. And if you guys remember, Ron Paul said something like this during the Republican debates, and nobody at the Republican debates on the panel or in the stands really took issue with this. He said, honest rape. That, you know, apparently he believed that only women who have been raped honestly should have right to abortion rights. All this comes down to is denying women abortion. That's it. Nothing else. None of the other justifications mean a damn thing when it comes down to it. And this is Todd Akin kind of getting caught in a Mitt Romney moment where he is supporting something he could support before his base, but the general public freaks out when you realize how far out of league these guys are. So, you know, I'm trying to sit down and write something, and my thoughts are bouncing around in my head. But the two things that come to mind is that, one, this isn't an instance of misspeaking. Todd Akin was just telling you extremist Republican policy position, which is, if you're a woman and you have a baby inside you, tough shit. That's it. Nothing else. Raped, incest, tough shit. You're stuck, you sinner. And you know what? The other thought that crosses my mind is that real men don't pick on raped women.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and it goes to the central point. Now, I have to give Todd Akin this, though. If you believe, as Paul Ryan says he believes in what he termed the Personhood Act, that the moment of fertilization creates a human being with rights, well, then, you know, then your position makes sense, if that's what you believe. Now, that's what's funny about all of this. Now, Paul Ryan's going to run away from what he said he believed. He's going to return to his Randian, Ayn Randian view of atheistic killing of babies, you know, to put a weird point on it. But the idea that this is outside the mainstream of Republican thought is nonsense. This is mainstream Republican
thought.
This
is totally mainstream for them. Yep.
And, you know, when people hear it, they don't like that. Because, you know, I was watching this morning, they're doing their little New Hampshire town hall, Ryan and Romney together, and every word they say is a lie, including and the. Ryan talks about how he's going to protect Medicare. He's going to end Medicare as we know it. That's what he is for. Who is he kidding?
No, he's going to protect Medicare for the rich. The game I like to play is like that game where if you see like a street sign or any sign, you have to say like, in bed. Well, the game I like to play is, you know, for the rich. Whatever the Republicans are saying, just add the words for the rich behind it, and it sounds exactly the way it's meant to say. I'm going to protect Medicare for rich people because that's going to be your new cash cow.
Yeah, I mean, and that's Social Security. Now, one of the interesting things that happened, and we'll get back to this Todd Akin story because there's more to it, and I want to talk there's about some of the reactions. One of the guys I'd love to listen to today, and I'm sure Media Matters is on it, is how does Rush Limbaugh react to it? But we'll get to that in a second. But as long as we're on Medicare, I want to play for you, Jesse. You might have missed it. Ed Gillespie this weekend on how Ryan Romney will save the Medicare. Will save Medicare.
Listen, this ought to be rich. Let me put down my coffee.
Listen to this.
Under their plan, with the Obamacare and the $716 billion, Medicare Part A, which is the hospital insurance part of Medicare, stays solvent until 2024. But if Governor Romney is elected and follows through and repeals Obamacare and takes away the spending cuts and takes away the tax increases, the Medicare trustees say that Part A then becomes insolvent in 2016, only 4 years from now and 8 years earlier. What's Governor Romney going to do about that?
Well, he's going to reform Medicare. That estimate does not assume that there will be any other reforms. And as you know, the Romney-Ryan plan is to save Medicare for future generations by allowing for different options for people. If you're, by the way, below the age of 55, no change for anyone who's currently on Medicare or 55 and above. And the reforms that they would put in place would make Medicare put it on a sustainable footing for as far as the eye can see. And that's an important distinction.
But the problem is that those reforms don't kick in. And that's one of your selling points until 2023. It doesn't affect any seniors or anybody who's close to being a senior. But that doesn't solve the Medicare Part A problem, which kicks in 2016. So what are you going to do to keep the solvent between 2016 after you've repealed Obamacare, and 2023?
Well, Chris, there are other reforms as well. As you know, Governor Romney supports gradually increasing over time, bringing the Medicare eligibility age in line with the Social Security retirement age. Secondly, this Congressional Budget Office notes that these
By 2016? Because I thought that was also only kicking
in. It's phased in, but it would extend the solvency. The Congressional Budget Office says that the assumptions about the Medicare Trust Fund Part A being solvent through 2024 under the Obamacare proposal is unrealistic.
Yeah, so there you go. Well, they're not going to touch their Medicare, except they're going to touch your Medicare by raising the age of Medicare eligibility. So seniors, people over 55, and so on, not to mention all the rest of us who aren't yet at that age, they're gonna end Medicare as we owe it.
Oh no, I'm writing a letter to my grandmother now explaining to her why she has to pack her shit and get out, and I'm trying to figure out how to spell disenfranchised. But besides that, the argument, like, okay, Obama's healthcare plan is going to keep it solvent. If you repeal it, it goes insolvent. And then his argument is, well, the CBO can't adjust for new reforms. Like, what? They're saying if you get rid of this, it goes to hell. And you're saying, well, we can get rid of it, but the CBO doesn't know about the next reform we're going to pass, which is apparently Ryan's We're Actually Saving Medicare. Listen, the Republican Party wants to do to the Medicare what they did to the post office, okay? Which is dismantle it. At this point, all they're good at is sabotaging stuff. They're not good at fixing things or building it, but lighting a match, burning it to the ground, and then salting the earth when they're done, Republicans are awesome at that. That's all this is, and the mental backflips that these people have to engage in order to come to their own conclusions just prove how full of it is. If they were honest, they wouldn't need a long explanation, you know?
Well, of course. I mean, I think that's the basic point, that this is old-style Republican hatred of Medicare and Social Security, for that matter. This is not new. Ronald Reagan hated Medicare.
Yeah,
Bob
yeah.
Dole hated Medicare. They all worked to stop Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. That is the Republican record.
You've seen guys do this for, like, the last few decades, and the media just doesn't bring that up ever, you know?
Well, if they don't
bring
up
any... watching the Yankees and having them introduce Derek Jeter as, like, a rookie every game, no matter how many World Series he wins.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the fact that the media is terrible at their job is not new to me. And I at this point don't. I almost don't pay attention anymore. I mean, I do every once in a while when something is so egregious, but that they do a lousy job, don't tell the truth, and simply don't know how to cover issues is not anything new. Let me give you an example. Here is the media, and this isn't about an issue. This is just a general thing. Politico has some kind of e-book about how there's disarray in the Obama camp. Eh, who cares, frankly? I don't care that they wrote this. But these are things that I found. And they talk about why Obama is so intent on winning re-election. He has no respect for Romney, etc. Then he says the two things Obama fears most about a Romney victory, a 7-2 conservative Supreme Court within a few years, and the equally unbearable possibility, in his mind, that Romney will get to take a victory lap on an economic rebound Obama sees just around the corner. I'm not going to let him win so that he can take credit when the economy turns around, Obama said, according to an aide. Eh, okay, whatever. Here's the part. Look at how Politico looks at things. Quote, Obama has himself to blame for what has arguably been the greatest unforced error of his political career. That's an interesting. What do you think it's going to be? What do you think? What do you think that? Before I tell you, what do you think they're going to say?
I think that error is.
What do you think they're going to say the error is?
Oh wow! See, this gets to be fun because it makes me, as a rational person, try to imagine how a complicitous irrational person would think. Right. So. Okay, this is liberal progressive Jesse putting his hat on and saying my first big mistake was not going for a big stimulus without all the tax cuts, just a huge spend, you know, like infrastructure something, right? That's just
that's what a sane person would say. Listening to Tim Geithner was his big mistake, no question.
Tough financial reform. I would say they would say that Obama's biggest mistake. This is what I think the Republicans or Politico, let's say, would say. They would say his biggest mistake was not being bipartisan enough on legislation going through Congress.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, they didn't come up with that one. That's a good guess. I would have guessed something stupider, which is that they didn't replace Biden with Clinton for VP.
Yeah, they've been hawking that one. That's
yeah.
where
but that's not what they came up
like
with. I'm with
inside
you.
The Beltway fantasy land.
Right. I'm with you. I would have argued that listening to Tim Geithner was his biggest mistake. Picking Tim Geithner was his biggest political and policy error.
Okay.
Because the economy would be in better shape now if he hadn't done that, in my opinion. But here's what they say. The greatest unforced error of his political career was, drumroll, his team's failure to adequately form a strategy to deal with the avalanche of unregulated cash crashing down on him from the GOP and Romney-allied super PAC. That's ridiculous. First of all, they did have a strategy, and they've been executing it. Number two, it's working. Obama's winning the election, in case you haven't noticed, Politico. This is so inside the beltway stupid that it's so funny. And I'm sorry for the segue,
okay,
but it's just funny.
I dig you on that, Armando. You know what? It's like a, I could see them making that comment about like a House representative or a governor's race, you know, a smaller non-national race. That may, okay, that argument might work. Obama's actually doing pretty good against the big money. That's why they're trying to steal the election now in Ohio, in Florida, in Pennsylvania, in swing states, because buying it isn't working against Obama. That's the kind of the crazy thing, is that as a rational person, you see this corporate interest, this corporate invading democracy, basically, trying to thwart democracy, and Obama's beating that. That's really a big thing, you know? But not to say that it's not as bad as it is, but to say that, like, he's already lost that game. I kind of feel like Deion Sanders pointing at the scoreboard during the Super Bowl. You remember that a couple years ago?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's how I feel with these guys. It's like, no, we're beating you right now. Look at the scoreboard.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the scoreboard. That's exactly right.
But you know, that goes into something else I just wanted to slightly touch upon today.
Go ahead.
Which is basically that it's in the interest of the media to have this look like a closer race than it is. It's also in the interest of both campaigns because they want enthusiasm. They want their bases fired up. So they want you to think this is really close too. But this is where the media can really exert its power, and as it often does, in a negative way. And it's by ignoring the reality that when you look at the swing states, the states that aren't going from one pile to another, those are the states in play. And Obama's frigging wailing it, man. I mean, like, if there's 11 swing states in play, 9 of them are on Obama's side. And Romney can't break 46%. The media's not telling you that story, and for a good reason, because they like a good show. This is like the political Super Bowl. Only in the Super Bowl, the winners are the ones who make the Super Bowl. In presidential politics, if you kind of suck, but you're not totally crazy as Rick Santorum, you might make it to the Republican Super Bowl just by showing up with a suit and a haircut and a bunch of, you know, billionaire-funded attack ads. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the Republican Party is not a Super Bowl team. They're not. You know, like, look at the Tom Aiken thing. You'd think, like, the word would go out, like, hey, guys, there's 2 months to play. We've got to try to win voters. Like, try not to say something stupid that's going to come back. Cause check it out. Paul Ryan, who was brilliantly picked from House leadership because we all know how popular Congress is, Paul Ryan endorsed Tom Aiken like a month or two ago.
Right.
Could someone make a hash-up campaign ad out of that?
That is a great point. I did not know that, and I'm going to go see if we can find that when we get to our bottom of the hour break. I'm surprised we haven't heard that, and that's a great find. So you're saying that Paul Ryan in the race for the Republican primary, in Missouri, he picked Todd Aiken over Sarah Steelman and the millionaire guy who ran. There were three candidates in the Republican primary. And Paul Ryan's favorite was, in fact, Todd Aiken. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm going to add a little note here because I saw this weekend. I just want to fact check myself real quick. I know I apologize to the listeners. It's not quite professional. But I want to make sure I'm right on this one. So I'm fairly certain, but I might be wrong, and if I am, I am glad to correct myself, but I'm fairly certain Paul Ryan, was on the side of Aiken in that primary. And let's also remember, Aiken isn't like a Tea Party guy that just showed up out of a cornfield because he's pissed off about the black president. This guy's been a politician for like a decade now, if not more, you know? He's been a House representative for several years now, so this guy's been endorsed by a lot of people. A lot of people have been at Todd Aiken's campaign fundraisers and taken the pictures. And this is where my mind works, where you get a guy who says something like this, like...
Right. No, well, he didn't afford... Jesse, give me a second to get the story right so you can hear. This is actually reported yesterday, Talking Points memo by Benji Sarlin. He did not formally endorse him, but this is what Ryan said about him. Todd Aiken has been a great asset to the House Budget Committee. His principled approach to fiscal responsibility is exactly the kind of leadership America needs, and I appreciate his hard work. So,
okay, it wasn't an official endorsement. It was kind of like a thumbs up in his direction.
Big thumbs up. In fact, Aiken touted it, and Ryan had to say, no, I'm neutral. He doesn't, not giving his official back.
One of those sorts of things. Huh?
That's always a bad sign from a politician, isn't it? Right, but here's the thing. You don't have to look that much farther. There's two things that we know Paul Ryan worked on with Todd Akin. One is personhood amendment, and I can give you the details on that. H.R. 212, introduced into the House of Representatives by Mr. Akin and Mr. Ryan, among others. And that bill said the following. This is a bill to provide that human life shall be deemed to begin with fertilization. With fertilization, Jesse. All right, so in the exercise of powers of Congress, including Congress's power under Article Section 2, Congress declares the right to life guaranteed by the Constitution is vested in each human being, and that life of each human being begins with fertilization, cloning, or its functional equivalent. So it's interesting. They endorse cloning in this bill as well, but that's what the idea was. This is what Paul Ryan is about. This is what the Republican Party is about. And Mitt Romney is too weak, as President Obama is right to note, he's too weak to stand up to these guys. Too weak.
Yeah, you know,
too weak.
I definitely get that George W. Bush kind of confused feeling absolutely. From Romney sometimes.
At least from a political perspective, he's absolutely – he's not going to do what happened to George Bush. He's not going to raise taxes or do anything responsible because he will not piss off his base and lose and have a Pat Buchanan run against him if he wins. Let's hope we avoid all of that. Jesse, give me a second to do a station ID. You're listening to Daily Coast Radio, the Ministry of Truth show. I'm Armando Lorenz, and with me is the Ministry of Truth, Jesse LaGreca. Jesse, we're going to take a break in 7 minutes at the bottom of the hour, but I've steered us towards these discussions, but is there something else that you've been paying attention to this weekend?
Yeah, you know, on the rare occasion where I watch the Sunday morning political talk shows, I tend to argue with the TV. If I'm like hanging out with my girlfriend, sometimes she's like, dude, I really don't want to hear you argue at the TV. But this weekend, I wound up getting some of David Gregory in. David Gregory, who's one of my favorite pundits because he reminds me of a cartoon character. David Gregory has a very striking resemblance to the Pink Panther for some reason. I don't know why when I see him, I hear the music. But anyway, David Gregory had Governor Bob McDonald of Virginia, who you may recall had his invasive vagina bill, right, where if a woman's trying to abort a pregnancy, they have to, like, literally vaginally insert the probe, you know, into her body against her wishes. Mandated, in fact. So they have this guy on, and they have Governor O'Malley, I believe, from Maryland, Democrat from Maryland, and they're talking about the presidential campaign. And Paul Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but Paul Ryan sounds like the kind of guy who supports this crazy stuff. I'm pretty sure Rachel Maddow talked about this, the vaginal insertion bill. So they bring on Governor of Virginia, who basically got disqualified from the VP race because of this outrageous stance he took on abortion rights. They bring him on, and instead of asking him about the controversial bill he passed in his state or the Republican presidential tickets, like ties to that crazy stance, no, they bring him on to talk about how mean and hateful this race is and how Obama is a dirty fighter. And I'm thinking to myself while I watch this, Virginia celebrates, it stopped it for a while, but now they celebrate Confederate History Month. And this is the guy that they bring on to concern troll Joe Biden's chains remark when Joe Biden said they want to unchain Wall Street so they can put you back in chains.
Oh, God. Yeah, go ahead.
The guy from the Confederate History Month is the guy they bring on to concern troll him.
That's
and what I love is that O'Malley, the Democratic governor from Maryland, who I like a lot, this guy, he's got his head screwed on tight on his shoulders, in my opinion. He starts saying, like, wait, are you – he's like literally in a calmer voice than I'm going to tell you now, saying, like, yo – Romney's playing this welfare ad. Romney called him a hateful person. We know what you're doing. You're going somewhere that political parties haven't gone for a long time, and it's pretty obvious. And then what does David Gregory do? He cuts him off. Cuts him off right there. Like, no, okay. let's let the Republican governor from the Confederate History Month state give you his point of view on things. And this is what I'm talking about with a complicit craven and corporate media. It's that if you're going to have the Confederate History Month guy on, right, then you can't let him be the guy to talk about what a horribly racially insensitive comment Joe Biden's correct chains comment was without mentioning the fact he's from the friggin' Confederate history state. There's a reason I walk around with that Union hat on. People need to remember that this was a big thing that we won, and it's over. And these are the same legal arguments, and please, I'd love to hear you chime in on this, Armando, because you have a legal expertise. These are the same legal arguments that they're making on the issues today that they did back then. States' rights, states' rights, states' rights, unless that state's Democratic and we don't like the way they're governing. That a state has the right to a vaginal probe. The state has a right to tell women they can't have abortions, even in the case of rape or incest. This is literally putting it's not a bureaucrat between you and your doctor. It's a theocrat between you and your doctor. The decisions that a woman makes. And to me, a real man doesn't pick on rape women. He doesn't mess with that stuff. Like, at that point, you should be trying to help that person with everything they need. And it's their decision, not yours. But my big thing was really with Sunday morning. It's just watching David Gregory, to me, is just such an spectacle and epic fail. David Gregory really makes me angry.
Yeah, he is terrible. I mean, Stretch is terrible, doesn't know anything. And I don't watch Sunday shows, so I've given up on that whole aspect of things.
There's a few that I've caught. Like, I love Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes is awesome. I think he does a really good job. I hope he has a fantastic career ahead of him. Other people have their days. Melissa Harris Perry's got some good stuff. But I'll try to tune in to CNN or Fox just to see what's on. And, oh my God, why are they even waking up in the morning? Fox News could just hit the snooze alarm, and I would learn less staying in bed, you know?
Right. No, I guess that's true. But, it's a mistake. I just don't pay.
I got in the habit of waking up early, and now I do it on the weekends too. And I'm like, oh, what's on TV? David Gregory, get me my coffee. Because to me, I mean, I've only dabbled in interviewing people. I'm sure there's a lot to learn. I'm certainly not on that level of his, work background. My resume can't stand up to David Gregory's. But there's a certain skill that a person has in asking the right question. And David Gregory, for some reason, hangs on to his job when he asks the wrong question every time. The wrong question to the wrong person. Like, you have Confederate history governor here. Why the hell are you asking him about Biden's racially insensitive statement? You literally give 1 month to black people and 1 month to fucking Robert E. Lee. Are you kidding me? We won the goddamn Civil War. And for some reason, we're splitting this even. It's like when Texas says, oh, no, we need to put Robert E. Lee in the textbooks because you should know his side of the story. He could have been right. Are you freaking kidding me? No, he was wrong. And here's a funny little note before we go into the break. There were two slave owners in Texas at the time before they seceded who owned 100 slaves or more each, right? Every other slave owner in Texas at that time in history owned less than 100 slaves. There were only two guys in all of Texas. And they used their personal wealth and influence to basically push Texas into the Confederacy because they wanted it to be a slave state that bad. This is the Wild West version of the Koch brothers. And I remember reading this story a while back, and I want to do some more research on it, because when I heard it, I was like, wow, they sound like if the Koch brothers were literally slave drivers instead of just trying to be that now.
Right, absolutely. Jesse, we're at 11:30. We're going to take a two-minute break and be right back to discuss more on Aiken and everything else. You were listening to Daily Coast Radio with Jesse LaGreca, the Ministry of Truth. I'm Armando Lorenz. Please stick around. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
I've heard it all before.
program, the Ministry of Truth show on Daily Coast Radio. With me, of course, is the Ministry of Truth, Jesse LaGreca. I'm Armando Lorenz. We've been talking about Todd Akin, the Ryan Romney ticket, Medicare, and the history of Republican hatred of women. Jesse, we are going to, of course, revisit some of these issues even today. But before I go there, you were talking about the Sunday shows, and I was trying to explain why I don't watch them anymore. I have two reasons. A, I used to know, I don't like them. I think they're terrible. But so they're not informative or entertaining to me. And here's the part that I think clinched it for me. There was a point where I used to think the Sunday shows mattered, but I'm convinced now they don't matter at all. And I'm beginning to think most of the media doesn't matter at all, and I'll tell you why I've come to that conclusion. I think, yes, it has some marginal effects, but I think that direct campaigning, people get their news or information more directly, and I think the campaigns actually have a real ability to bypass, for the most part. You can't overtly bypass the media, but you can basically basically bypass, which people don't watch a lot of news anymore. And I think for Democrats, that's probably a good thing. And it really does explain why in a election cycle that Republicans should be dominant in because of the terrible economy, it's the reverse. Democrats, particularly the president, seems to be on very solid footing right now.
Well, I think it's twofold because you're right. The news has lost power, and for several reasons. One is legitimacy. If you're always wrong, I'm just going to not watch that, you know? The other is accuracy. The internet does it better. And in my experience, when you talk to people and you just get to that part of the conversation, if it gets there, where you ask them, like, oh, where'd you read that? Where, you know, people who are online will tell you online. There's like a clear divide. People from online who also read print media or listen to radio or TV, and people who only get their news from the aforesaid sources, TV, radio, print, right? The people who are missing out on the internet tend to be your older voters for the most part. And that's why I think the Sunday morning talk shows are very influential, and more so than they should be with that block of voters who stays home Sunday morning. So I'm not talking like younger people who might be like shaking off a headache Sunday morning. You know, our generation right now probably isn't waking up in time for Sunday morning with George Will, but our parents are. And what they say there matters. And having, like, kind of, you know, a small affinity for it, because I got to be on one of these shows. So every now and then I'm like, what the hell, I'll watch it, you know? And to me, I think it's just as much of a disservice as Fox News, but it's in its own unique way. It's like toned down for your parents, George Will explaining what the kids are doing wrong, you know? And the way that they allow a Michelle Bachmann or a Bob McDonald, someone with an insane history, right, that the public should know about, they bring these people on, they don't talk about the most noted aspects of their civil service, and then they let them opine on positions that they're totally disqualified to have an opinion on. That, to me, is something that should be brought up and, like, not just point that and laugh at, but also observe so that anybody else, like, you know, one of our parents who might actually see an article somebody wrote, like, no, this person you see on Sunday morning rooms is actually a bad person. They have policies you don't like. That's, to me, important. But then again, it's one small aspect of the whole bigger picture, you know?
Right. Oh, I agree. It has some effects. It has to pay attention to it. But I could just tell you from my personal views as I just described them. One of the other aspects of it, and by the way, I want to take a minute to replay the Todd Akin statement because we're going to talk about that
a little bit.
Who people might have missed it. Here is what Todd Akin said on the Jaco report, which is a reporter named, I believe, Thomas Jaco of a Fox affiliate in St. Louis. And this is what he said, and I want to talk a little bit about the reaction on the right about it as well. But let me play the Todd Akin legitimate rape comments.
Of the importance of all of us.
Okay, so if an abortion could be considered in a case of, say, a tubal pregnancy or something like that, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. Well, how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question. It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. But let's assume that maybe that didn't work or something. You know, I think there should be some punishment, but the punishment ought to be in the rapist and not attacking.
Yeah, well, there you go. Stupidity, ignorance, coupled with intolerance and a desire to... Wow,
it's like stunning. I'm almost curious, because I've heard that clip played a couple times now. I'm curious to hear the fuller clip, because where he was ending, like, well, at least we should punish the rapist. Like, holy crap, I didn't even know that was part of what's up for debate. Were they debating, like, let the rapist get away with it? Like, I hate to say it like that, but the way he says it dismissively, like, I'm not saying we're letting the guy get off. Like, who the hell was talking about that? You know?
Well, I mean, just for the record, in case there's any doubt, that's complete nonsense. Now, a couple things have happened. First of all, Romney came out with a very weak statement to it. It said, oh, we disagree. Today, after getting flack for their weak, they say Congressman Aiken's comments on rape are insulting, inexcusable, and frankly wrong. Like millions of other Americans, we found them to be offensive. He didn't find them offensive yesterday. Today, he decided they were offensive. And another reaction that's pretty interesting is
this awful fella face side up, you know, so
it's Scott Brown. I tell you, he's funny. Scott Brown in Massachusetts obviously sees the danger here. What did he do? He called on Aiken to drop out of the race.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
The best part of having well-financed enemies is that when they form a circular firing squad, they can afford the best artillery.
Now, it's funny because it just shows you where this is headed. Now, on the other side of the equation, there's people like Dana Loesch, CNN's Dana Loesch, she's upset that people are upset.
She's mad at liberals for being mad about this.
Yes.
And, like, that, it's like, this is what happens when you have to defend an indefensible position. The Republican operatives, hacks, can't say, like, this was FUBAR, and I'm not with that. There has to be someone who's going to be like, actually, I'm going to try to defend him on this point. Holy crap, Todd Aiken just said something that was the political equivalent of, like, I eat kittens. And he's like, well, actually, I'm going to try to defend eating kittens for an instant here. Dana Loesch, I've got to say this to CNN. You are horrible. What does it take for you to fire this person who adds nothing to the conversation but like a high-pitched vitriol dog whistle? What, CNN, this is why you are horrible, that you have people on your shows who, like, I don't get it.
Now, it's funny. You watch Sunday shows. I like reading the crazy right-wing blogs. I read Robert Stacey McCain, who is crazy, and his blog sidekick, Smitty, who wrote, this is funny. It looks like the left has another Alinsky Rule 12 play underway. That's like, oh, this is manufactured outrage. Yes, because nobody could possibly be outraged by the phrase legitimate rape.
Like, it just never dawns on them that the rest of people are free thinking. For them, it's like we're reading it from a playbook because that's kind of how their ideology works. Like, you just kind of do what the Ayn Rand book says, and we don't do that. We read lots of books. That's what happens when you have multiple sources of information. You form your own ideas and individual thoughts and personalities. That's why every Republican woman comes off as like a stepper wife to me. I don't know. I don't want to be discriminatory like that. But, like, welcome to 2012, you know? Yeah. It's a 1950s ideology wrapped in a 1980s business suit. And you know what? If Obama is the Joker, then Mitt Romney is Two-Face. I mean, he was like Two-Face if Harvey Dent was like a job outsourcing CEO.
It's a amazing reaction. And here's the thing. You know the stories that the people will say when the people have the Ryan Romney plans described to them and what they're going to do to Medicare and Social Security and and cutting Medicaid and the budgets and everything else like that and giving tax cuts to the rich. They don't believe that any sane person would have those policies. This is like that. No one believes that any serious person would believe what Todd Akin believes. But here's the secret. Paul Ryan believes it, too. Paul Ryan believes it, too.
Oh, God, at least three-quarters of the Fox News audience believes it, too. I hate to say it, but if 20 million Americans are brick stupid, that's apparently enough to hold the rest of this country back for another semester.
Yeah, a semester. I think, I would flunk the entire country, at least parts of it, and make them go back to the beginning, but that's me. But anyway, Jesse, it's 11:43. I'm going to go to the 15-minute station ID a little early. That you're listening to the Daily Coast Radio, the Ministry of Truth show. I'm Armando Lorenz. With me, of course, is the Ministry of Truth, Jesse LaGreca. We've been talking a lot of Todd Akin, a lot of Medicare, a lot of Ryan Romney. Jesse, you've been focused on another issue, and I'm going to talk about it just a little bit. There was a story that I thought was really quite good in the Columbus Dispatch by one Daryl Rowland. It ran in the Sunday Dispatch. And it talks about how African Americans in Ohio are reacting to all the shenanigans that are going on there. As you know, the Ohio Secretary of State suspended. I didn't know you could possibly do this, and it strikes me as incredible. Suspended Democrats from county election boards because they did not vote the way he wanted them to do. What kind of situation allows a Republican Secretary of State to suspend people from the other party from an election board? It's just insane to me. So to me, I'd like to know how in the hell that is possible. And number two, it goes to a point, which is what does it mean for Ohio African Americans? And there was a lady quoted there. Her name was Deidre Reese. And she talked about how she remembers when she couldn't vote, or her family, her older family couldn't vote, and how important it is to them to have this right, and how any attacks on the right to vote really motivates people to fight. And I'm glad to hear that, and I hope that is catching, because even myself, to some extent, I've just been too matter of fact. We allow Republicans to make inexcusable offensive behavior. You talk about Dave Gregory. When has he ever done a story on this? And then there was a clip of Brian Williams being asked about this, and no, he was like,
the whole debate is started, like how outraged we are at Joe Biden. Meanwhile, they're stealing democracy in friggin' Ohio, right?
Here's an interesting story that just broke. I'm watching MSNBC in the background, but I think it's actually a pretty interesting story and somewhat on point. The Augusta National Golf Club, which you know is where the Masters is held, has admitted two women to their membership, Condoleezza Rice. Congratulations, Condoleezza, and a lady named Darla Moore, who I have to admit I'm not familiar with who that is. But that's great news. Good for Augusta National. It took you long enough, but I'm not going to say that's bad that you did it today. It's at least you did it. I wish you'd done it 20 years ago, but good thing.
That's good news.
That's good news. So the that's excellent, but
Great PGA. Welcome to 2012. See, everybody's getting in on the action.
Right. So I wanted to talk about that.
Not the year 1950.
One of the things that is involved was the story that I interrupted myself to tell you about was the remarks from the Ohio State Speaker of the House, I believe it was, who said, quote me, I forget what he said exactly, but it amounted to you can't have rules that try to allow African Americans to vote.
Okay, so I think I've got the quote.
Okay.
Garamondo, that it was Doug Priest.
Okay, go ahead.
Who sent an email to the Columbus Dispatch. I guess I really actually feel we shouldn't contort the voting process to accommodate the urban, read African American voter turnout machine. Now, if I could just throw this in here for a second, Armando, and I'm sorry because I kind of feel like I've been talking over you.
Go ahead. Please, take this.
Okay. So in Ohio, they extended the voting hours in what I'm going to call white people counties, right? These are overwhelmingly Republican counties. I'm willing to bet white people live there, and a lot of them. And they're trying to not allow those same extended hours in Democratic districts, okay? So basically, in Ohio, Republicans feel that white people, basically, if you live in a white people county, you should have as much access to the ballot box as possible. But we're not going to accommodate African Americans. You know, as a government official, your freaking job is to accommodate people. Your job is to do your job and accommodate people and be there. You can't be like, no, we're not doing it for black people today. Sorry. Holy crap. This is the most racist thing I've ever seen. And I mean, like, the fact that this is like a background story is a disgrace in this country. They're literally trying to disenfranchise black people for the re-election of the first black American president. The fact that, like, if you had an African-American commission, an African-American county, who's trying to take the vote away from white people, freaking every Republican would be lighting their hair on fire right now.
Yeah, it would be ACORN, you know? It would be an ACORN-like reaction.
No, but basically, this is voter suppression for everybody who doesn't live next to middle-income white people. That's pretty much the definition of segregation. So, at this point, I'd like to ask, where the hell is Eric Holder? Like, can Eric Holder stop, like, playing mini-golf in his office and friggin' do something at some point? This sounds like a clear and obvious violation of the Voting Rights Act. I'd love to hear something happen about this before next season, you know, to quote, you know, Tom Hanks, for God's sakes. Can we work on this before next season?
Listen, let me defend Eric Holder. What they're supposed to do, which is file a lawsuit challenging the change in the rules. There are other things going on. And the Democrats in Ohio and, frankly, the Obama campaign needs to be on those things. The Justice Department and the Attorney General, I think, are doing what they're supposed to do. They're trying to enforce the federal voting laws in Ohio and in Florida. I think that they've done their job. They can't be overtly political, but other people can. I actually think the issue is David Gregory and people like that and Brian Williams, who poo-poo and don't care that there is a systematic campaign by Republicans in various states to...
Yeah, this is a systematic campaign, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Jess.
No, the word systematic campaign is exactly right, because you're seeing the same pattern of behavior. Florida purged the voter rolls, largely, and I've written about this myself, largely Latino and African-American people in, you know, low-income communities, right? In Pennsylvania, you know, getting the early voting, the ID proposal they have there could disenfranchise a tenth of the state. You know, and the politicians there flat out said, like, we hope this helps Romney win. Like, this is not voter fraud at all. And Digby wrote something about this weekend, and she nailed it. And she said, you know, voting fraud is complete and total bullshit. There were like 10 cases in a country of 160 million voters, 10 for 160 million, where people tried to impersonate another voter. It doesn't fucking happen. It's like getting hit by lightning while being attacked by a shark. It just doesn't happen. Yet Republicans have managed to turn this into an issue. And when they polled people and asked them, how do you feel about voter fraud? Like, a majority of the people thought this was a big issue. This is like a weapons of mass destruction-sized lie, and the media doesn't do anything other than reinforce it. But here's the other thing that made me think. If you said that Wall Street fraud was a major problem, that would be accurate. To say voter fraud is a problem is total bullshit. So in the age of Wall Street fraud, the friggin' big financial institutions that are backing Romney to the teeth on this are literally able to make democracy the problem. You see how they totally switch it? Like, we're going to run the Republican candidate, he's going to talk about how the black president tried to give free welfare without work to black people. Then we're going to make it harder for the black people to vote. We're going to make it easier for the white people we're offending to vote. And then we're going to blame the whole thing on people trying to steal democracy, and it was poor people trying to steal democracy, not the rich people. Yeah, okay, that sounds like a total clusterfuck. Can we do something about that?
Yeah, that's...
That sounds like a big thing. We should.
It's
that on
a big thing.
Come on, like you and me, man. We could do this.
And when you're doing he said, she said reporting, it really is incumbent on Democrats to talk about this more and to make sure their people are on Sunday and to demand that it be covered. So the media's terrible. They're incompetent. They're idiots. All of these things. But Democrats need to make more about this, more of this issue.
Well, you know, I'd love to take just one short second to lend some advice, too. If there's anybody within our listening audience who might actually end up on one of these talk shows one day, here's some free advice from me, okay? And that's if you have 5 minutes on TV to get your point across, don't start by telling me what a great guy the other is. You're just wasting airtime. Get to your point, and if the interviewer doesn't ask questions that you like, just make your statement anyway. Get your point across. The big thing that you want to say, make sure you say it. And that's more powerful than anything else.
Absolutely.
But
I mean,
yes, I agree with you. If we're going to have people on, there should be strong voices, and they should know their shit, basically. And, you know, at least when I saw Governor O'Malley up there, I was pretty – he did a really good job. You know, I would like to see I don't know how to say it, but I would like to see more, you know, Alan Grayson kind of people out there, like Sherrod Brown, or, you know, strong speakers.
Yeah,
the conciliatory, like, oh, my opponent, I respect him, he's a good guy. Yeah, great, you just spent your first 30 seconds on there making the case for the other guy. That was an epic fail.
It was really good. Robert Gibbs is very good. And he was terrible, I thought, as White House press secretary. He's just miscast in the role. He's a great campaign spokesman, great at doing what you just said. Just cutting through it, making his points, and getting out the message he wants to get out, irrespective of who he's on with. I give him a lot of credit for that. I've always thought he was great on the Obama campaign.
And I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, staying on message is not easy, and the other guys are professionals, you know. But if you're going to get your chance, like, I just hope that, like, there's somebody who's like, hey, we've got really good speakers. We're going to put them on. Like, no, we're not going to let... We're not going to let Ben Nelson near the camera on this one anymore, you know? Joe Lieberman stays in the background. Poor Joe Lieberman. He doesn't have any convention friends anymore.
Joe Lieberman is funny. And, you know, nobody cares about him. I mean, that was really the point of a lot of this, was to just get him out of the picture. And that worked. That worked. So... Jesse, we're down to the last 3 minutes or so till hand our mic over, so to speak, to the guys who run the after show. That's Wink and Justice Putnam of the Netroots Radio team. And, of course, they are kindly broadcast Daily Coast Radio, KGRO in the Morning, who it's returned to live broadcasting this morning for 2 hours, and, of course, our show, The Ministry of Truth, with Jesse LaGreca, who is the Ministry of Truth. We will hand it over to the Netroots guys at noon, Wink and Justice. Jesse, you're in the last 2.5 minutes or so. I want to give you the floor so you can help give people a heads up on what they need to look for in the...
Well, I think that one thing we're going to see more and more of, and I'm going to keep trying to bring it up, and I'm sure Mondo's going to keep bringing it up, is a lot of the voter disenfranchisement they're seeing around the country. I think this is a huge story, and if the media is not going to do it well, it looks like we got to do their job for them again. So we're going to keep talking about this because, to me, it's inherent to the very nature of, do we have a democracy or not? Do we have a democracy, or do we have a corporatocracy where special interests basically make the decisions and you don't have an active say? So being a New Yorker, my state's not at stake, but my country is. And my countrymen and all the things I care about, the basic rights of democracy. If you don't have the right to vote, you don't have any rights at all. You know? So that's what we're going to stay on. We're going to talk more about Todd Akin, and I'm sure the ensuing flip-flops and double talk and double think and all the other things that surround it. And I think Armando touched on something very important here. We don't know what Rush Limbaugh has told his masses yet. So that's going to be another story tomorrow, because I'm sure Rush Limbaugh is going to have another nipple fit over this. And hopefully the world survives another 24 hours, and we'll be looking forward to being back here tomorrow morning at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
Jesse LaGreca, as always, with Armando Lorenz, And Jess, thank you for another great show, man.
Okay, Jesse, yeah, one thing to note about Rush is he is from Aiken country, southeastern Missouri. Cape Girardeau, the stuff.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Show, and we are this over to the boys at the after show. Let's do we do thank you for tuning in, and we will be back tomorrow. Hope you come back with us as we follow where this story is going and how it played out.
Armando Lawrence and Jesse LaGreca. This has been the Ministry of Truth.
Daily Coast Radio on NetRootsRadio.com.
The power is on.
Is this mic on?